Welcome to Hits and Gigs, episode 11. My name is Noah Sherman. That's Savick.
Nice to be here, Noah.
I think I've just given up on trying to pronounce your last name. It's not even worth it at this point.
No, that's cool. I think Savick is good enough. I don't think there's like any other Savicks on the podcast.
Yeah, I don't think so.
So we should be okay.
Yeah. With special guest Savick Smith.
Savick Smith. I don't know what he does, but he sounds like a cool guy.
Yeah, man. Dude, anyone named Smith is cool in my books. Okay, so we have a really cool episode coming this week to y'alls. We are going to talk with a couple members of The Vare, and you're going to hear their music throughout the whole show. They are a band from Montreal, and I guess it's kind of like indie, rock, pop, it's more than that for sure. It's like, it's really good music, and I guess I'll let them describe their own musical styles, but they're gonna be coming up, and we talked to Mikey Desjardins and Gabriel Dennis, two of the members of The Vare. And Savick, a really cool thing about the band is like they all play at least like two or three instruments. So like,
wait, are we talking about The Vare or like the band?
No, The Vare. The Vare.
Okay.
The band's cool too, I guess, you know.
Because the band did that too, which was awesome.
Actually? I didn't know that. Fuck.
If you like all the horn parts on like their first album are all played by like other people in the band.
Holy shit.
Yeah, man, they're all really good. But anyways, The Vare.
Yeah, the, like, you know, you'll have, I don't know who plays what, but like one of the guys plays like, you know, bass guitar, sings, plays piano, you know, like that's kind of their vibe. It's like piano, bass, guitar, drums, and vocals.
Mm-hmm. Really? I love when bands do that, man, because you just end up with like different instrumentations on every song, and it keeps everything really fresh.
Yeah, exactly. So I wanna bug them about like how they pick and how they decide and like where that all came from and whatnot. It's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And then after that, we're talking to Mark Promain, who's the head of the woodwind department at Humber College, where we all went. Since a lot of our friends happen to be applying to music schools around now or have recently been hired at music schools, I feel like it'd be good to talk to someone who has a really long history of teaching, which is what Mark has. So
yeah, I mean, like, I know I'm hopefully going to be starting to teach in the fall, and I have some questions that have been left from previous teaching experiences about how to deal with certain things, so it'll be nice to have Mark in to clear some of that up.
Definitely. Yeah. Oh, and I guess I should also mention that Dan is still part of the podcast. He's just not here right now.
Yeah.
Forgot about Dan for a second there.
Well, we've all been really busy, and like I'm out of town, so
yeah, summers are hard.
It's just been like everything. It's just been all over the place. Like, you and Dan did the Vare interview, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so, and you and I did the Mark interview.
Yeah.
We get a good dose of everyone now.
Yeah, exactly. It's good. It's different combinations. Yeah. But no, hopefully when September comes back in, we'll, like, be able to actually, you know, be all together in the same room again. How about that?
That would be awesome.
It'd be crazy. That'd be weird. I don't know if I can deal with it again. So, what do you say? You want to just, You want to
jump
right
just
to the end?
Hop right into it. Get some knowledge busted on y'all.
Cool. So you're gonna hear a bit of a tune from the Vare, and then we're gonna talk to them.
I can't believe
and then
you
Mark
just said
right
that.
Up. What? I didn't even know what you said. I just fully ignored you.
It's okay. Don't worry about it.
I'll find it. All right. Here we go.
tired mind, looking up only to see your eyes, as your people come to notice me. Drums begin to pick up speed with the voices, and I hear them say,
back to Hits and Gigs. We're very excited to be here with Montreal's The Vair, who just released a brand new EP on May 4th, right guys?
Yeah, May 4th, that's it.
So that EP is called Letterbox. We're pretty stoked to talk to him today. How's it going, guys?
Good, it's going good. Writing, it's good.
Nice. Okay, well, let's talk about the band a little bit. So what's the format of the band? Who are the members? How did the band come together?
It's kind of a cool story, I guess. We all kind of like formed around Mikey Dage, our singer.
We have a guy that works with us really closely. His name's Mikey Labby. And me and him were playing guitar and just jamming around and trying to find a band to start, you know, start gigging and stuff. And I thought of Gabe because we used to be, Gabe Dennis right here, we used to be in corresponding like metal bands back in the day, and it just turns out that we both started to like this kind of like indie music coming out, this new hip music with the kids like these days, and that's how it started. And then he had a friend named Jeffrey Lauber, and we just got started, and that's how it started.
Yeah, and then we, I knew Jeff from, like, Vanier, actually. I think you guys, I don't know Noah is, I think I might know Noah is, but I think he went to Vanier too, did he?
No, Noah didn't go to Vanier, but I mean, I did, and that's...
Yeah, yeah, obviously, yeah. Oh, you did.
We're all classically trained.
Me and Jeff and Luca went to Vanier. And, Luca's our fourth guy that we got later on, actually, like in September of 2012.
Okay, so yeah. Jeff's, Luca's a relatively new member, Ben.
Yes. Yeah, pretty much, yeah. But the three of us, like me, Jeff, and Dej, have been jamming for quite a while now, like
a year and a bit?
Yeah, a little over a year.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about the sound you guys have on the record and maybe some influences that pushed the record kind of in the direction that it ended up being.
Well, it's mostly drums, guitar, bass, and singing, and piano. That's the sound. we were all really influenced by, we all happen to have really similar, interesting elements in the music that we like. We all love hip-hop. We all love indie music. We all love... He's pretty broad now, but we all love, like...
Whatever, you know, like, just, like...
We don't like country that much, basically.
Some country's good. Yeah, I know. The EP is, like, I don't know. It's, like, kind of, like, an eclectic array of, like, different, like, influences we've, like, put together. But, like, I don't know. It's exactly what you'd, like, expect, like, a first EP to be like, you know? It's, like, our first effort... Kind of
yeah, exactly.
Putting together songs that we think sound cool, you know, like just the way we like them.
A lot of experimenting with just ideas and concepts for songs in general. Like, let's have a song that is like
we have a song on the thing called on the EP called Foreign Way that's like, we were like, I just want to put beats on a song, so we just did it, you know, like we just were kind of fucking around with
beats.
Stuff that's,
oh yeah, yeah, as in like
sampled drums,
electric,
like,
drums, yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Nice, very cool.
Yeah, like we just wanted to experiment and just kind of find ourselves, as cheesy as that is.
But yeah, it's, yeah, I guess that's pretty much it. It's just kind of like an experimentation with like similar normal song structures that, like, you know, except for like one or two. Yeah, but mostly it's just a lot of fun, basically, on the EP.
Nice. I want to ask you guys about like your setup, like instrument wise, because you have a pretty unique thing going where, like, you all play like a ton of instruments.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you guys decide, like, who plays what?
How do we decide?
Yeah.
A lot of the times it's just based on how we started jamming it. Like, if we're writing a song and I could afford to be on the drums, like, I could play and I've been writing it, then we'll try to make it work. Or, like, if Gabe is on the piano and we need a drummer and I have to be up front, we'll get Luca to drum.
Yeah,
you know,
literally,
I mean? Like,
literally, it just depends on the song, like what has to happen. Like it's almost not a choice. Like
sometimes it's about who has the better feel on the instrument for that particular song. Sometimes, but mainly, yeah, it's not. We just kind of go what we have.
Like it just kind of depends.
Whatever the song needs.
Whatever happens, like whatever we really think should be happening in. On that instrument for each individual song, like you kind of just go for whoever can do it better.
Yeah. Nice. We all just happen to, like, I guess I'm going to list it out just because it's probably what you want to know a bit. I am the singer and I also play drums and guitar and, like, sometimes bass, but not really that much bass. Gabe plays piano, drums, sings, and could do guitar if he wanted to, but we just haven't really
haven't
needed
it.
Jeff plays mainly bass and guitar, but he does them better than we all do them, really. And Luca can play drums, bass, sing, and play guitar. So we're kind of lucky in that we have, you know, a bunch of multi-talented, I don't know if that's the right word, but...
Multi-instrumentalists, yeah. Okay, so getting back to the EP a little bit here, do you want to talk about the writing process and the making of the record a little bit and kind of how that went and what you guys learned from it?
Okay. As far as the writing process went, probably the most... Again, it was kind of really a scattered writing process. Like, some of the... Literally about half that EP recorded, written as, like, completely, like, jammed. Like, we'll have certain ideas that, like, Mikey wrote years ago, and we'll just jam them out, and we'll flesh it out, and eventually it becomes what it is. Yeah. And some of them were extremely, like, with a certain thing in mind. Like, you'll hear... I actually don't really want to say which ones. It kind of changes the vibe, but, like, it's just, like, certain songs on the EP were written with, like, a very specific idea, and the rest were just kind of, like, whatever, and we just went for whatever came out first with them.
Okay, cool.
And the actual process of, like, us being, like, how it was when we were there was, like, strenuous time because we all are pretty creative and all have a very... very, like,
we're
mainly
really opinionated,
yeah,
mostly, yeah.
Mainly me and Gabe, I hate to say it, but have, like, the most vision. Usually we'll hear a song, we'll say, like, okay, I could see the song progressing in this way, and a lot of the times, you know, like, it's just, it's hard to get everyone to just agree on something, but, like, once we do, we all just freak, and then, like, it's,
yeah,
amazing.
That's it. Basically, it's, like, once, like, we usually disagree until the very, very end, and then we'll finally, like, come together and be like, this is good!
Which makes recording, like, a pretty hard thing right now.
Yeah,
we'll learn how to record, but, like, yeah, it's crazy.
It's fun, though, yeah, it's cool.
I'm looking at, like, your EPK right now, and it's really, like, well laid out. I really dig it. It's, like, you know, easy to read, like, pretty straightforward as well. Did you guys design it yourself, or did you have someone do it?
No, yeah, that was our buddy, Mikey Laviolette.
Yeah, the guy we mentioned earlier.
Nice.
He's, like, he's our buddy, but he's also, like, a really, really, like, integral point of our...
Unofficial fifth member.
Yeah,
so
we like to say that. Like, he kind of, he does a lot for us. Like, that's one of the biggest things. Like, he'll do a lot of our album artwork. So, like, all the artwork you see with our band is, like, him. And, yeah. You know, he'll just help us in, like, every possible way.
And, like, he literally designed the entire thing, put it together. Like, we were just the yes and no sayers, you know? We were just the assholes going, no, we don't like this. No, we don't like that. You know, like, I mean, but he literally came up with all the ideas.
We still had some, like, conceptual stuff going on. We're not, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I like, certain designs.
But, yeah, it was really up to Lavi. That way, like, we kind of just threw it all on him. And, like, he'll be glad to know that you like him.
Nice. We work with him as well. He's a great guy for sure.
Yeah, it's true.
He works with everyone, dude. He's like Montreal's graphic designer.
So he's all his friends and his friends' friends' graphic designer.
Yeah, exactly. I was just kind of like browsing your Facebook page, and your cover photo right now is something called the Tunnel Sessions.
Yeah.
What is that?
You can find it on YouTube. What we did was it's just like an outdoor acoustic recording we decided to do of two of our songs on the EP.
Yeah, we found this great spot where the acoustics and the resonance in there is like so beautiful, and we just want to play there all the time. And I'm saying this now. I'm actually just talking out, like thinking out loud. But I think we should probably make it a thing where we just play we play songs there and record it and then put it online.
It sounded so good. I watched the video.
It's the place, man. We're not even that great. It's the place we play.
The reverb there is like perfect. It was crazy.
Yeah, especially in like the vocals. I mean, it was like, it sounded just like a tunnel plugin, but obviously you're in a tunnel, so it's a real tunnel.
When you hit the drum in the tunnel, it's like, I don't even know. Yeah, it's like the biggest cannon far off in the distance. It's crazy. Wow. Like it's like a never-ending freaking.
It was such a long tunnel. It wasn't a very long tunnel, but it was such a crazy reverb that Gabe actually had to play back to be on time because of the delay.
Yeah, there was a delayed response. Like even though we were like 4 feet away from each other, I was off time when I was on time. Like, so I would hear them. Back. I would hear them further away from where they actually were. It was really weird.
Wow.
It was super cool.
I find that so funny because, like, just before we got you, like, onto this call, I was telling Noah, like, dude, I'm pretty sure that's overdubbed because, like, it sounds so fucking good. And I was like, I'm going to ask them if they overdubbed that.
There were zero overdubs in both those videos.
That's amazing.
That's incredible, yeah.
And both improvised, might I add.
Yeah, we did not write that before. Besides the song, we did not write that before we got in there.
There was no arrangement idea, but it was like, that's awesome. I'm really glad you thought we overdubbed it. It came out that well. That's great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Cool. So, I'm all out of questions. Dan, do you...
I've got a few more, like two more.
Cool.
Okay, I have a tough one for you guys right now. So if you need some time to think, we can always cut it and like do the editing later.
Okay, cool.
If a train going at this miles per hour, is
it
one of those
questions? Brain teaser. Has to do with the average speed of an African swallow, actually. Okay, so what do you feel gives you guys an edge in this competitive indie rock market?
Who wants to know, Dan?
With you. I do, so I can know your edge and then take it.
Yeah.
I can be super humble right now and not answer your question, but I think we're going to answer your
question. Well, look, my honest response about that, like, the edge, you know what? Honestly, like, the biggest edge I think we have is, like, how bad we want to do this lives. Like, at least, like, I mean, literally, we weren't able to discuss, like, this amongst ourselves, but at least as far as, like, my own edge, let's call it in quotations, goes, like, it's just how I just want to do it so bad, like, the rest of my life that I honestly don't really give a shit, like, what else, like, happens to me, you know? So, like, I don't know. This band is fun. Like, I love the music we do. I think everyone in the band is great at what they do, and I think I'm great at what I contribute with them. So that's the biggest edge I could ask for in a band. So
I totally agree with that. Everything Gabe just said, I feel the same way. But I definitely think, like, if you want the nitty-gritty answer, I think we have sick vocals. Not to toot my own horn, I think our vocals are really catchy. A lot of people like my voice, and I think that just the fact that we want to change, we're trying to change stuff as opposed to just let stuff like to catch on to a craze and go with it. We really want to
be an accessible. We want to take all the elements from a lot of the indie scene and a lot of the hip hop scene and just make it super accessible and make it like interesting and
yeah,
pleasant to listen to.
And the best way we can do that is to like please our own ears, and by pleasing our own ears so far, we've gotten good enough responses to think that
we like ourselves.
Yeah, exactly.
Pleasure ourselves. Man.
I think being self-indulgent in a band is a great edge to have. I say that jokingly, but you know.
Okay, for the last question, what's in store in the near future for the Bear? What are you guys up to right now? What are you doing in the next little while?
We really want to play a lot of out of town gigs because we want to further our reach. So we're going to be playing a lot of Canada. Try to maybe bleed into the States, but it's just a lot more difficult. We're definitely gonna, we don't know what kind of album it's gonna be, whether it's gonna be an EP or an LP, but we're definitely gonna put another compilation of songs together because so many songs in the works right now. So, and we just wrote tonight, and I'm telling you, I'm just really excited about it.
We're still turning material for sure,
but yeah. Well, I do know that you are coming to Toronto soon, and our main listenership is based out of Toronto, so if you want to promote that, you can go ahead.
Yeah, well, we have...
Fuck Toronto!
fair.
No, the closest Toronto gig we have set in stone is going to be September 19th, right? Dude, Dan, it's with you.
Yes, it is with me. Yeah.
Van.
Oh, I see what this is, what's happening here.
It's pretty much every show, yeah.
This is a setup for Dan's own...
Foiled.
I'm promoting my own gig through you. That's what I'm really doing.
Yeah, exactly. That's genius.
So if people want to grab the EP, it's available on Bandcamp from you guys.
Yeah.
Thevair.bandcamp.com.
That's it.
And then you're also on Facebook, right?
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, we're on all those social media things. Like, you can find us on Facebook, SoundCloud, Bandcamp for sure. It's either on all of those things, either if you want to find us, it's just search The Vair or The Vair Band, and one of the two will work for sure.
Cool.
And, yeah, you'll find all our music there. Any updates will definitely be on our Facebook. We have a website, www.thefairofficial.com. We got a Tumblr.
Oh, man.
We got it all, baby.
Damn. It's insane. Cool, and I suggest everyone check out that the Tunnel Sessions videos, because those are really cool.
Oh, yeah, we have a YouTube channel. There you go. You can find the Tunnel Sessions on YouTube for sure.
Nice. Awesome. Guys, thanks a lot for coming on.
Yeah, thank you.
Welcome back to Hits and Gigs. We are now happy to be joined by Mark Promain. He is the head of the Woodwind Department at Humber College, among many other things. You said you're currently in the middle of like this like really long... You're doing shows like every night for the next little while, right?
Yeah, I tend to be hired for some longer-running Broadway-type shows. Yeah, so the one I'm doing right now is Wizard of Oz downtown Toronto.
Cool.
We started in December... It's now July, and so we're going another month to August 19th.
That's insane.
18th, I guess, yeah.
It's a long time.
Yeah, so, you know, yeah, we end up doing 300-plus shows sometimes on a show. Depends, but this one ended up going a long time. It's been good, though. Nice. Yeah.
Very cool.
Gets a little busy during the school year. when right. I'm teaching in the day and doing the show every night, because there's 8 shows a week.
Wow. So like a matinee during the weekend?
Sometimes there's, there's a Wednesday matinee and there's Saturday and Sunday matinee, so, yeah. But, generally it's pretty good.
Okay, so, we brought you in today to talk to you mostly about teaching. I mean, I wouldn't mind knowing about the whole, like, Broadway, or, like, the show scene, but, like, maybe we'll do that another time, because that'd be cool to talk about.
Sure.
But I guess the first question is just, how did you get into teaching?
Well, I guess, like you guys, I was in music school, and all along the way, I'm sure you guys have started doing some of this too, with some private teaching and things like that, and I got started with that. And my plan, because my first music school was the University of Western Ontario, and they train a lot of music teachers there. It's not as heavy a performance situation as what it is at Humber College, so... I would say probably 90% of the music students there are headed towards teaching. And in my mind at that time, I was actually taking a music ed degree. So it was, when I was, 18, 19, 20, I was headed in that direction for teaching school music school. When I finished it at Western, I was still interested in, learning some more things and not going directly into teaching like a lot of my fellow students were. So many of my classmates went on to teacher's college for the 1 year and then got right into teaching. And I went for a couple of years to Humber just to, learn some more stuff. And I kind of changed my direction. I started to think about maybe playing as a career. I did go and do my... So I did 4 years at Western, 2 years at Humber, and then I did continue on and do that year of teacher's college. So I learned a lot about pedagogy along the way, how to teach, teaching methods, and just, sort of putting together a bit of my own philosophy about teaching, what was working. And during that 1 year of teacher's college, we got out and did some practice teaching and went right into the schools. We had 4 2-week sessions, so I learned a couple of things. One was I didn't want to do that at the high school level, and two, I did learn a little bit about teaching methods and approach to teaching. I will say that probably I learned the most, though, from one of my teachers along the way at Western. He was really a dedicated teaching professor, and he had such great methods of communicating and getting the idea across and having a way of getting the students to figure out almost on their own. He was really good at guiding them and getting them to experience things. And so that became a pretty big part of my philosophy, in getting to get my students that I taught how to learn things, have them experience it and feel what they're doing, right, rather than just talking about it and describing it,
Nice.
So, yeah, along the way, I gathered some philosophies that I put together and, learned how to manage a classroom a little bit along the way. And after that, I felt like I wanted to play. So I ended up doing some private teaching in those early years after I finished school. Private teaching was all I did. And then sort of established myself somewhat in the music community, and then was offered part-time teaching when I was in my late 20s at Humber. So it's been a long time I've been teaching at Humber. It's been like 20, this next year would be my 28th year.
Wow, congrats.
which is kind of scary, but at the same time, I felt like in those early years I learned a lot about teaching, and it really helped me when I started teaching at Humber.
Nice.
And then I felt I felt comfortable coming into it, even though I was kind of young. I was still in my 20s, but nice. A lot of times you just take what you see from the people who have taught you, take the best things from them, and then put that into your own philosophy. And that's what I did.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nice.
Let's just hop right into it with some of the more difficult teaching questions. Mark, I'm wondering what you do to keep students interested. That's been my biggest problem when I have private students, is just keeping young kids interested in the lessons.
Yeah, the younger kids is a challenge because some of them are there because their parents want them to be. I'm sure Savick knows all these things, but I have done a fair amount of that over the years, and I slowly changed my approach with them. Those that were not like thinking of music, or they were just doing it because their parents wanted to, or they just, you know, want to do something different or fun, those kids are special because you have to make it fun for them. That's what he's talking about. And you know, I think most of us who are trained, fairly, you know, musically trained to a high level, we understand the importance of some of the mundane practice of technique building and all of that, right? Mm. And to a kid who's not headed in a direction of maybe music as a career, that's just painful for them. I mean, it's painful for most of us too, but we know we need to do those things. But for a kid like that, it's almost like you're beating your head against the wall, and it's not fun for them, and then it's not fun for you if they're not having a good time. So I slowly changed over to take a little bit of that off. Like, you know, most of those lessons are half an hour typically for a younger kid, and you know, generally I'd take 5 minutes and run through a scale and just kind of, you know, if there was anything special about it that they should know about, just so that the next 25 minutes would be something that they enjoy doing.
Hmm.
And that might be a duet or play along with some kind of, we don't have to get, I don't know if you want to get into specific methods, but there's methods out there that can make it more fun, play along type things for kids.
Cool.
And those ones they seem to like more. For obvious reasons, it's just kind of fun and different for them. So the younger ones that are not specifically thinking of music as a career, try to just make it as much fun and choose the things that they enjoy the most, rather than feeling like you have to, you know, create the next, you know, super musician.
Right.
You know, you just try to keep it simple and fun for them, and not put too much emphasis on what we think is important sometimes.
I find that's like a big struggle for me when teaching privately is like providing results for the parents, or like, you know, like,
yeah,
versus having just like fun. But I guess the,
yeah,
fun you're talking about is still like working towards getting a lot better at the instrument, obviously, if you're doing play-alongs and duets and whatnot, right?
Yeah, I mean, you've got something to show for it. I mean, if you work on something like that and they get better on it, then, you know, that's something to show them at least. And I think, you know, and with some of the things you can offer today, if you've got parents and you're concerned about that, there's always, you know, if the parents aren't right there involved, which I was never all that comfortable with,
yeah,
but, you know, there's some really easy apps to just record something really good that you're working on, and then you can probably just email it to the parents. I'm just thinking out loud right now, because I haven't taught young kids for a while, but if that actually might be, I have like a really good app on my phone. It's iRig Recorder, and it is free. It records really easy, and you can email the file right out of the app itself.
Huh.
And I use that in my classroom actually at Humber. It works great.
Nice.
But that would be something that I would probably utilize with kids. You know, like let's do a recording of this, and then if we don't like it, we'll take it, do another take, and then, you know, we'll try to get it. And that would be kind of probably fun and interesting for them too, right?
Yeah.
Plus, it serves a good purpose in that you would. I mean, we all need to hear ourselves back, right? It helps you improve. So even for a young kid, mm-hmm, it would be kind of fun for them to hear themselves. And if they thought they sounded pretty good, that would make them feel good. If they thought they needed work, then maybe that might inspire them to practice a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then email a decent take to the parents, and then say, hey, this is what we've been working on. I think he's really improving. And I bet you that would probably go a long way.
Yeah, get yourself another group of lessons, right? Another more guaranteed work with the parents. Yeah. Yeah. Like, okay, you can stay.
Provide a good service.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. provide a decent service for them. And well, something to think about anyway, I guess. Yeah.
What if you're struggling to stay interested?
That's a good question. Yeah.
So I mean, I guess that stems a bit from the kids not being as interested, or like if you're teaching a lot and maybe you just, I don't know, you just got to power through, I guess. Yeah.
Well, I guess it goes back to, I mean, if you've made it as fun as you can for them up to that point, and they're still not responding and they're not enjoying it at all, maybe it's better that either they switch teachers and maybe someone else can motivate them, or you talk to the parents and say, you know, I don't know if they're really interested in this. Mm. Maybe you should have a good talk with them. And, you know, I mean, I would probably ask the kid as well, you know, do you really like doing this? And if not, I mean, there's no sense in forcing a kid who doesn't want to do music to do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like anything else. There's so many activities out there a kid can do, and their parents probably just want to do the best thing for the kid, just, you know, have a well-rounded kid or give them opportunities to do many things. But if music isn't one of them, actually, I have some experience in that. And my son, he's now 21, but I got him involved in music lessons, first piano, and really it was like I tried to make it as interesting for him in the practice of what his teacher gave him. It was really hard to get him to do anything. He wasn't interested. I got him a bass when he was 10, and he ended up going to the kids program at Humber for 2 years.
Oh, cool.
On the weekends.
The community music program? Or?
Yeah, the community music. And we're going back now because he's the same age as pretty much you guys. And his bandmates, this is kind of cool, when he was 10, were Sam Dickinson and Matthew Chalmers.
Oh, nice.
That was the trio when they were 10.
Wow.
Jeez. Anyway, they were both highly motivated to do music, and he was his heart actually wasn't really into it. So after 2 years, you know, he actually said, you know, Dad, I know that you're a musician and you know, probably would be happy if I went into music, but I just, you know, I'm just not feeling it. And I said, well, you know, we tried it. It's good. And, you know, you'll have a good appreciation for it as you go through life. And he's actually picked up the guitar and messed with it a little bit. So, you know what? Something was accomplished, I think. And he's probably richer for it at this point, even though he didn't carry on. So it's not a, you never know. It's probably not a complete waste for a kid who tries it and then just gives up, you know?
Yeah.
If they're not into it, they're not into it. So, you know, of course you want to try to keep as many students as you can, not only because you'd like to have a success, but you'd also, you know, you like the income as well, obviously. And if you've got motivated students, that's good. So I guess it would stem to, if you've done as much as you can in terms of making it fun for them, then there's not much more you can do after that.
Okay. Yeah.
He was studying with Mike McLennan. I remember Mike was making it really fun for him. Like, they were working on pop music that he liked at the time. Like, he liked Blink 182 way back when, you know. And so Mike would work out the bass lines with him so he could play along with the CDs, you know. And you know, he did his best with him. I have to commend Mike for that. You know, nice. There's always a way, you know. And I would say that for any rhythm section instrument, if you've got a kid who likes a certain type of music or a certain band, that would be the best thing to do to keep them going. It's just like, let's learn the part on this particular song, you know.
Right.
And for a rhythm section player, you know, most of what they listen to is somewhat playable for most kids, you know.
Yeah.
It's not all that complicated,
so
you could dumb it down.
Yeah,
you know,
there's actually there's quite a bit of work involved in like preparing for lessons then, right, if you're doing that kind of thing. Because, like, you got to learn the lines yourself, and
I suppose if you were doing that, you could probably do it right on the spot, because, you know, given it's not going to be that difficult.
Yeah,
it'd be something that you could probably learn one pass ahead of the kid. You know, if you were learning a bass riff that went, you know, two bars, four bars. You could just start out by doing the first bit of it, and you know, I think you could probably do it right on the spot. I don't think you'd have to do that much prep,
right,
to do that kind of thing. And I think that would be really interesting. And just, I'm just thinking out loud again with kids of that age, right? Yeah. But yeah, probably would work pretty well.
Cool. Savik, did you have one?
Yeah. Mark, I was wondering how your approach changes from teaching privately individual students to teaching a group lesson. Like, I know you do the WINS masterclass at Humber, and I mean, that must be just a totally different thing from teaching, like, a one-on-one lesson.
I there's obvious benefits to both, or else, you know, it wouldn't be presented at in a school setting. But I think, you know, actually, a lot of schools don't carry on a master class the way we do at Humber. Hmm. Some do, but a lot don't. And I really think it's as important, can be pretty much as important as the private session, you know, one-on-one. There's, I mean, you guys have experienced this, but when you're in a group setting and you're working on some particular aspect of playing, and someone else in the class is, you know, has a question or is in their playing, I might notice something, you know, and I'll make mention of it. Now, if I say that, and you're going to be quite sure that just about everybody in the class is going to take note of that and go, am I doing that, you know? So there's a lot of value in group lesson. It's, you can gather so much from each other. And I think because everybody's sort of in the same ballpark, there's, you know, after the initial group starts up and people are feeling each other out, once the whole thing gets rolling, there's a certain amount of comfort and support people lend each other, I notice. And so it's, you know, everybody's there to help each other. And, you know, when you're guiding that kind of group, it's really beneficial to everybody when someone has a question or you need to point something out about their playing. And then, you know, other people will have questions about the same topic, and then you can try with them too, you know. And you can take, a lot of times you can take time and do a one-on-one, a short one-on-one with somebody, then have everybody else watch. And not only that, I think subconsciously that pedagogical approach that you take in that situation rubs off on everybody simultaneously, in terms of, okay, when he wanted me to accomplish this, he took this approach. And I think that's kind of there with most people subconsciously. They go, oh, okay, well, that seemed to work, you know, I'll file that one for myself, you know, down the road if I need to do some teaching. And I mention that very often too, not only in lessons but in master classes, like, guys, notice that this is actually a good way to approach this in terms of getting people to learn this. And so, yeah, I mean, there's that. And then, of course, the private is, I mean, you really can't go without that. That's obviously, it's got to happen if you're going to get somewhere. But I would say, the obvious benefits of that are you can focus in on the person and exactly what they need and go over and over and over certain things that they need to be working on or aware of. One thing that, just as an example, maybe, in the early part of the year, in the first probably 7 or 8 lessons, a lot of my first year guys need to learn how to shape the sound and do it to use their physiology to shape the sound into something that's, you know, a little more, I don't know, just that sounds better. and so that's really hard to accomplish that in a group lesson. Like, you can impart all of the specifics of it to everybody and have them go and try it on their own. And some people will have great success just at that, but most people need to sit down on a one-on-one and just get feedback and I really find the call response type thing and getting a person to hear what they're going for is really valuable back and forth. So
right.
That's a really important aspect of teaching, is that call response thing, you know, sort of master apprentice, for lack of a better word, approach, because that's, you know, I mean, I've had some teachers who actually didn't play, and that's kind of weird. They would just talk about it, you know, and, you know, really to have that one-on-one and going back and forth is really, really quite important. And then there's so much you can say about a person and whatever they're doing, musically and technically, that you can cover, that you can hear in their playing and show them how it can be done differently, or, you know, in a way that makes it sound better, that you can't do on a group lesson.
It seems like, I mean, the private lessons are, like, much more specific, but in the same sense, like, group lessons can be really good for everyone working on, like, shared issues, I guess.
Absolutely, and, you know, most of a group is going to have to address that same topic that we're on, you know, that same issue, I suppose, that someone may have.
Right.
You know, somebody, you know, just to make it saxophone or woodwind specific, something about articulation, and you hear something in a player about their articulation, and so let's just talk about this, and let's try this and that, and everybody tries something, you know, it's like, okay, I want you to feel this and listen for this, and, you know, you can get a lot done in a group, and impart certain concepts to a lot more people in a shorter period of time and get a lot more done than with the one-on-one. The one-on-one, you can hear the person back and forth, but, you know, to get a concept across to everybody in a group in a quicker manner is not bad. It can work pretty well.
Nice.
Cool.
Yeah. I want to ask you, I mean, you mentioned that a lot of your first-year students, you tend to work on sound. Like, that's one of the things you work on pretty early on. Does that just happen, or do you kind of, like, build a curriculum around students? Like, do you have, like, a general direction you go with most students, or do you kind of, like, build it around the specific student?
In the master class, I have a whole sort of a topic list, I guess, in terms of tone production. And just to be general, I wouldn't go through every specific now, but generally, things to listen for orally, and then things to feel, like, physically, what you should be, you know, feeling in terms of tone production. And I would say, you know, like, since you picked that one, that's, I mean, pretty much any clinician we've ever had, that's, and they come in and they talk about the instrument, I would say 98% of them have started with sound as the most important thing that you can own as a musician, you know, any musician, really, it's your sound.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think there are, you know, a lot of the students coming into first year have had that message to some extent. A lot of them haven't, too, I would say. You know, from my experience, it's like, okay, well, never really thought of it as being as important as you're saying. But so that, you know, I can demonstrate that. But in terms of getting the message across, I can impart a lot of the concepts. And this is kind of, I hope I'm answering your question or we can get back to it. But you can impart a lot of the concepts in the group. And we can spend 15 minutes in the group going person to person and just taking 3 or 4 notes. Because you can get a sense of what they're doing physically just from that, you know? And we can get a lot done with the group, but in terms of the one-on-one and the sound, you know, I could probably spend with some students 6-7 hours, like 6 or 7 one-hour lessons, just on finding physically, you know, like with your physiology, a place that's going to produce a sound that's going to be a little more what they're looking for, you know. It takes as you know, like from any physical thing, any physical anything that you're working on physically to try and get a better feel for, you know that the human body is slow to. I mean, you can't. It's not like you just snap your fingers and you figured it out, right?
Yeah.
It's like for a tennis swing. Like you don't just go out there and pick up a tennis racket and you've got a great swing. It's like you got to go out there and hit the ball, you know, 15,000-20,000 times to get some kind of a flow and figure out what your muscles have to figure out what it is and get a muscle memory for it, right?
Yeah.
And so very, it's the same thing with playing a musical instrument. And in terms of the sound, like you really have to coax the muscles that produce, that shape sound and produce sound. You have to really train them and coax them to do something that is maybe not that natural, you know, at first.
So it takes a lot of time, like within lessons, to do that, obviously.
It does, yeah. And, you know, I could get specific about, you know, throat and tongue position and breathing and where to put the air and, just, you know, so many things. And that's the type of thing that takes the time to sort it out. And,
right.
But it's, I really enjoy it. I mean,
right.
I always say by Christmas my mandate is to stamp out bad sound at Humber because, by Christmas most guys are getting it. And I really see them practicing it. When I go by the mods, I see them doing all those exercises that I gave them, and it makes me feel really good.
Nice. That's really good.
Yeah.
So I guess that does answer my question from before. I was more asking like if you will have like a specific plan for like a broad plan for all first years. We'll be like, okay, we're working on sound first, and then once you get it, we're gonna work on like this other like technique stuff, you know, more technique stuff, and then after, or like. But I guess it will change a bit based on the student. Like, you might work less on sound and more on something else, just based on what their needs are, I guess.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Yeah, you're absolutely right, Noel. You know what I think works well, and I started, that's in the, you know, first four or five classes of that first year master class. Our goal is to lay out a really good practice routine for everyone, and, you know, that's going to cover... you know, sound, technical, working on some reading within a jazz idiom, within a classical idiom, work on tunes, working on playing over chord changes and what to do with that, and then maybe even doubling if somebody wants to add that to their repertoire. But
right.
So we kind of break it down into those parts of the practice routine, and that's what the first four, five, or six classes that we do. We just kind of go through each part of the routine, when we're kind of done all of that, and we've sort of put a rough amount of time, you know, so we'll say, if you practice for 2 hours, which is not enough, but if you did, you'd do this portion of the practice for 20 minutes, you know, and so on. So then we kind of get a sense of that, and then as we move along, even through the year, but I even mentioned at that point, I say, okay, now this is going to change, this whole thing. Like, you may be doing half of your time on sound only now. By Christmas, maybe you'll do only half of that, and so the whole thing's going to sort of, it's going to morph into something that serves you better based on where you are. You know?
Yeah.
I think, and I've talked to a lot of and seen a lot of people talk on that subject over the years, and that seems to be what it is. Something that morphs into a few years down the road into something that might be sound for 5 minutes, run through some keys, let's play some music.
Nice. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
5 minutes, 5 minutes, rest of the day.
Nice.
You know, and yeah. So that the music is the thing. You know, I think once you've got things going and you've got a sense of how to do these things, that, you know, they're going to come through in the music anyway. So I think, you know, for younger players, but so many of them at that point, they really need all of those real building blocks to have, you know.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So that's the philosophy that I take in terms of starting out with a younger musician like that, who's you know, hopefully going to dedicate themselves to it at that point, you know?
I think we're pretty much out of questions.
Okay,
so
cool.
Thank you for coming on. Yeah,
it's really good. My pleasure.
We always want to give our guests like the opportunity to kind of promote what they're doing, like what they're working on right now. Do you have like shows coming up, or I mean, you mentioned the crazy run of shows at I guess downtown, but do you have like some stuff you want to promote, put out there?
Well, I'm finishing that show in 4 weeks, so that'd be August 18th, 2013, and I'm done that show, and then actually I've got a month off of shows, and then I'm starting on another one, which is Les Mis, and that's pretty well known by a lot of people.
Yeah,
and I think it's back for the fourth run in Toronto over the last 25 years, but I got hired to do that, and so I'm going to do that until February.
Cool. Which venue is that at, by the way?
It's going to be at the Princess of Wales on King Street.
Okay, nice.
King and John, just north of the Sky Dome, or the Rogers Centre.
Yeah.
Still call it
to be right. Politically correct, yeah, you know. I still call it the Sky Dome, no, yeah.
And this year, kind of special for me because I have a sabbatical coming up, so I actually won't be teaching at Humber this year.
Oh, no, okay.
And I'm just trying to catch up to you guys. I'm going to write a project on Finale, which I'm learning. I'm going to write all the parts, and my project is to write sort of something that I know something about, which is for woodwind chamber ensemble with rhythm section and saxophone soloist. And I'm going to record all the parts and overdub them all. And then I'm going to bring in, I'm going to go in the studio and bring my files, and then we'll record a live rhythm section over that.
Very cool.
And that's my project. So I'll learn software, and I'll get a chance to do some writing too, which is exciting.
Nice.
So that's what I'm up to.
Okay.
For this next year, it's really I'm really looking forward to it.
Very cool. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Thanks again for coming on. I learned like a bunch of stuff about teaching. I think it's going to help a lot of people who are maybe just starting out in September with lessons.
Okay. Great.
So yeah, it's really great. Thanks a lot for coming on.
If you're looking for any other people who have a good sense of teaching and know, I think, a lot about it. Both the two teachers that teach pedagogy at Humber, Andy Ballantyne and Charantha.
Nice.
They, obviously put a lot of thought into it since they're teaching those courses, right? So
yeah,
I suppose if you want to get some other ideas about teaching, they would be good. Two good guys to talk to as well, since they, they teach a course that deals with it.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, I'm glad this worked out, guys. That's very cool of you to do that. It's a really neat little project. It took so long to make you love your life.
Okay, welcome back to Hits and Gigs, episode 11. You just heard two great discussions with a couple of guys from The Vare and Mark Promain. I learned a lot from both interviews. I feel like Mark's, I didn't know a lot of those things about teaching. It's just like valuable kind of information, right?
Yeah, man. I mean, every time I've taught, it's like questions always come up and I'm not sure how to deal with situations. So it was great to have someone on there who's been doing it for a long time and has no doubt dealt with each of the situations that I have multiple times.
Yeah. I mean, just the main problem for me when I'm teaching a lot is maybe the student won't be there by choice. You know, it'll be like the parents kind of making them take the lessons, and you can see it in the kid. Like they're just not really engaged as much, and maybe I don't know, it's probably me being a shitty teacher, but
if the kid doesn't want to be there, it's hard to be a good teacher. It's really hard to be a good teacher when the kids don't want to be there. Right. Like, what do you do?
Yeah,
what do you do to make them interested? You can't. There's nothing. And I think Mark made some good points, like maybe you just might have to go and tell the parents, like, I'm not getting anywhere here.
Yeah.
And he's not letting me get anywhere, so...
Let me teach them about baseball instead.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Damn straight. But no, it was good. And hopefully you listeners will, like, actually be able to take stuff out of there, because I know I did, so...
Yeah.
It was good. So we're getting to the end of the show. It's weird having, like, the old format back in, where, like, we have, like, over an hour of stuff.
I know, it's good. Well, I mean, we're actually doing interviews that are, like, you know, meaning something now, which is sick.
Yeah. Oh, it's great, yeah. I mean, I do like talking to bands about, like, releases and whatnot, but I really, really like talking to people who have been in the business for a while and, like, who can maybe, you know, teach me or, you know, impart some wisdom upon me, you know?
Yeah, shed some light on some situations that we're no doubt going to run into if we choose to pursue music as a career.
It's almost like cheating.
Yeah, it's good.
I love cheating. Okay, Savick, so as we always do, wouldn't mind hearing if you checked out some shows.
Well, since I've been back in town, I've been going to a lot of shows. Like, I went to McEwen here in my hometown of Edmonton, so I have a lot of musician friends who are all gigging around the city.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten the chance to check out a band called Catgut, and they're kind of like the best way to describe them is like grungy folk rock, I guess.
Cool.
Like, they're really rocky, but they got like punk influences, and there's definitely like kind of a Dylan influence, and I don't know, they're super cool. They're actually coming to Toronto.
Oh.
In the next little while. I think sometime in August. We'll post something on the Facebook page about this.
Maybe we can talk to them.
But yeah, that'd be cool, because they're doing their like little tour. And then I've gotten the chance to see a band called Two Bears North. Nice. And they're like a little like folky singer-songwriter group.
I think you mentioned them last time too, actually, yeah.
Yeah, and they were good.
Nice.
And then, I mean, just a lot of playing, too. Like, I went to there's a venue in Edmonton called the Haven Social Club, and it's unfortunately closing down. But I went to one of the jams there recently, and I got the chance to play with a group called the Turtlenecks, and they do Stax and Motown stuff, and nice. That was a blast.
Nice.
I started a ska band when I was in, like, grade 8.
I remember this.
And yeah, and they just played their last show last week.
Yeah.
And since I was in town, I got to play with them, and that was a blast. And we played with the Resignators, who are a ska band from Australia.
Nice.
And they're real good. As well as Suburban Legends played as well. I don't know where they're from, but they were great.
Jesus,
just
man.
A lot of solid music in the past couple weeks.
That's great, man. That's really cool. Do you remember last show I told you about this band called Gorilla Mask that I saw?
Yes.
And then right after the show, we looked up, we kind of like searched for Gorilla Mask, and we found that it's not actually, like, I couldn't find anything on the band, but like if you go to Urban Dictionary.
Oh, God.
Do you remember this?
Yes, I remember this.
Man, it's, I don't really, should I say it?
No.
No, I'm not going to say it. You can look it up.
Children. If you're interested, look it up yourselves.
And now you're all interested, so go ahead.
Yeah, of course.
But
what about you, Noah? What have you been doing?
I played a few shows and I checked out a few shows. One really good show that I saw, it was like it was part of one that I was playing. I played in Dan's group, Midcoast, for a gig, just because they needed a sub, because their drummer is out of town for the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And the band playing beforehand, it was Chris Pruden's band, and...
Oh, yeah!
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're pretty fucked. Like, they play this, like, modern jazz, and it's just, like, incredible tunes. I think for the most part, they're Chris's.
Yeah, I mean... I've known Chris for a long time, and he's, like, he's really good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, real good.
It's funny, though, because he always, like, explains his tune names, and they're all, like, some, like some video, like it's some video game reference or like some,
yeah,
some book.
Absolutely.
It's so funny. It's, but his tunes are just ridiculous. The thing is, like, I had also seen them in a studio session at Humber, because I took this class called Advanced Production, and we always were told to bring in bands to record them. And he brought in his band, and they played this one tune that they also played at the Transac, and they've gotten a lot better in a few months. It's really good. Like, they're a really, really tight band. It's
nice to see that yeah. bands are still, like, improving.
It's very cool to see, like, a band that actually is a band, you know?
No, yeah, we do talk about this a lot, but, like, there's so many just, like, one-off gigs with a group that you don't play with a lot that having a bunch of people who, like, always play together is, like, it's awesome.
Yeah.
You just build such a rapport with other people that, like, the music is better for it.
I'd say so, yeah. I feel like a lot of being in a band is just kind of, like, hanging out and getting to know people and just, like, having fun together, and then I think the music will follow after that. I don't know.
Yeah, like, I mean, with that ska band that my friends and I had started in grade 8, like, a lot of our first band practices were just, like, play some cover songs we all like for an hour and then go out and, like, beat the shit out of each other on the trampoline for the rest of the day.
Perfect. I don't really like rehearsing for more than a few hours. I feel like at that point you just kind of start to hate each other.
Yes, that's certainly true.
Yeah. Cool. Okay, do you have anything else? Are you doing anything in the next couple weeks you want to throw out there? Or?
As for me, nothing particularly interesting in the next little while. I'm flying back to Toronto in the next couple days. And then I think it's just going to be more or less chilling out for the rest of the summer unless something comes up.
Awesome, man. Very cool. I just realized that I'm not working at all after this coming Sunday for like a week and a half. You're back in Toronto. And Dan's going to be available evenings. So, you know
we
what that means.
We could actually do like a real podcast.
Yeah, we could like be in the same room together maybe. You know, that'd be crazy.
That'd be amazing.
It'd be a shit show, I think.
Yeah, probably wouldn't go over too well.
Nope.
I really have a hard time spending any time with Dan.
Yep, absolutely. Dan's still not here.
Which is great.
Right?
I know.
No, we love Dan. Everyone loves Dan. Okay, let's end the show.
Sounds good, man. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in.
All right, we will see you guys in 2 weeks. Yeah.